8:30. It's time for commencement of House Special Committee on Budget Subcommittee on Human Services and Public Safety. Today is Monday, May 23rd, 2005. We'll be reviewing House Bill 5129, which relates to the budget for the Department of Justice. And for an overview, we turn time to Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. In front of you, I think I did pass out last week, pass out to your offices a copy of the memo and the worksheets, and they're also underneath your agenda if you need another copy. This budget is for the Department of Justice. As folks understand, the Department of Justice is the general legal counsel and supervises all civil and legal proceedings in which the state is a party. They also play a significant role in defending the state's position on criminal convictions or defense of criminal convictions. They're also responsible for the child support program, district attorney assistance, crime victims compensation, and consumer protection services, which is an issue that we'll need to make sure we talk about as a subcommittee later on when we get to that particular division. There are 8 budget units or divisions in this, and it's my suggestion that we walk through each one and they'll probably take a vote or an approval or whatever after each of those divisions. Otherwise, it will get pretty long, and you'll forget something back on page one when we're on page 20. Major changes to the governor's budget for the Department of Justice is that by the time you get done, almost all of the criminal fines and assessment related crime victims programs will be restored to their levels that are basically the essential budget level just underneath that, and also that the governor proposed making those general fund and those will retain in this plan under the criminal fines and assessment. We'll talk about that when we get to the criminal division. There is an increase in limitation of position authority in a number of cases for grants that are either continued or that are new and not known at the time the governor's budget was put together. Many of those are federal in nature but come to this agency as other funds because they flow through another state agency, whether it's the Oregon State Police for terrorism-related funds or through the Department of Transportation. One package, which is probably the most significant package, is not included in this recommendation. That deals with the legal representation for child welfare workers at Department of Human Services. That was not included in the co-chair budget on the House side, so that is not recommended at this time. And finally, in the child support division, after taking a look at revenues planning to come in from incentive payments, in other revenues, there will be a fund shift that frees up a little bit over $525,000 general fund to be used within the public safety area at a later time. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to just start off by walking through the divisions. As with my work sessions, I plan to work off the table that looks like this, and then come back from time to time to the memo to talk about issues that are outstanding or, in some cases, where there are suggested budget notes. Both of these budget notes have been approved by both sets of co-chairs, and so that you know that it is okay if you desire to go forward with them. Moving to page, the first page of the table, or the worksheet, let me just tell you, at the bottom it says page 6 of 32. These will not go in consecutive order necessarily,
Mr. Chair,
because I moved some of the divisions around.
Where was it? Wasn't it?
Thank you. Mr. Wilson, which budget notes? You said the 2 of budget notes.
There's a budget note under administration in the memo.
I'm just not trying to get ahead of you. Then you'll cover that.
I will.
Thank you.
I will walk through the worksheet on the division for each division and then come back to the memo if there's points to raise in the memo. So starting with administration on page 2 of the memo and page 6 of 32 in the table, there For your information, the administration division includes the what they refer to as the front office, which is the attorney general, his immediate staff, as well as the support services in the department for budget, personnel, information management systems, those kinds of things. And this division generally charges or allocates funding from other programs in the department. So there's no general fund in this. It basically allocates its expenses across the entire rest of the department depending on the use of the services, whether they're accounting or personnel.
Mr. Chair.
First, wasn't it?
Thank you. Mr. Wilson, is it, again, I'm learning these terminologies in the personnel system, the DAS system, but is it normally that you call the chief information officer? That's really not a public affairs officer. That's technology, right? Information technology.
Yes. Did I call it? Well, sometimes it's called information management. Sometimes it's chief information officer.
But that is the standard. But yeah. It's definitely IT. It's
yes. Not. This one's IT.
Thank you.
In package 090, this is purely just the smart buy savings. There was no general fund to cut in this directly out of this division. Package 103 is a justice building renovation. This is a project that is probably 10 years in the making. The justice department or justice building is shared by the judiciary or the judicial department as well as Department of Justice. It's just east of the Capitol here. The building has significant problems with various AC, HVAC systems, the roof and other electrical system issues, and it's now slated to be renovated. This particular package, worth just a bit over $1 million, includes the costs that are attributed to the agency for that, which includes all the new systems furniture, all the wiring.
What did you define systems?
Systems furniture are those
module
furniture, sort of the 8x8 squares that you'll see in many. It involves the partitions that are generally like 6 feet high or so, and then the file cabinets and the desktop surfaces that are inside that inside the partitions. But a lot of this package goes for rewiring all the new communications and computer systems, because the building will have to totally be wired for that. That is usually the agency's responsibility. Includes moving costs and includes an increase in rent. When the Department of Justice is fully reconfigured here in a couple years, they will move out of private space at the corner of 12th and Court across the street to the Commerce Building. It'll take over the Commerce Building, which in the past, I believe, have been water resources have been in there. That building is near completion. And then also occupy a few of the floors like they do now in the Department of Justice Building.
Can you clarify something for me? Because mm-hmm. This is kind of new to me. Is this a government building or is this a private building that the additional rent is relating to?
This, Mr. Chair, is the Commerce Building, which is a state-owned or DAS-owned building. They are presently in a private-owned building that they're leasing. They will move out of that building when this entire reconfiguration of their space is taken care of.
Okay, so moving into the government building is going to result in a rent increase. Is that what the rent increase here
is? That is correct, Mr. Chair. It is going to rent. My understanding is, and you have had some interest in this in the past, it's generally they will be moving into a building where they will be responsible for 100% of the common space in the building, where that has not been the case in the past.
Do they have 100% of the footings in the building?
Yes, they do. They will when they do move into that building.
Has anybody looked at this? And of course, this is a project that's in
this project process. In the process. All the contracts have been signed, and it is a DAS-owned building.
Okay.
The only change at LFO, and this is on the next page, these decision packages or policy packages don't break real well on these charts. I think it's one of those things we'll try to fix for next session. The only change that we have recommended at the urging of the agency is to increase this by $125,000, and purely this is moving funds from this current biennium to the next biennium because the project has been, it will not complete itself until July and August when the actual moves will take place into the Commerce Building. So there's no increase in the project costs. It's just making sure they have limitations that they had planned to spend in 03-05 and having it available in 05-07.
Ms. Wilson, have you a breakdown of the $1,043,000?
Somewhere I do, Mr. Chair. I can dig it out if you would wish.
Well, the reason I want to ask is that this is not a one-time rent increase and that kind of thing. Then a component of this is going to be ongoing additional costs.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, the only ongoing cost past this one-timer is the $332,000 for rent. And that is the only thing that they're actually requesting an increase over time. The rest will be used out of their fund balances, the difference between the $1 million and the $332,000.
How many employees will be, will be in this new building?
That I cannot answer. I'm not sure how many employees will be in the new Commerce Building. I'm not sure if someone from the agency can answer that or not.
Representative Richardson, for the record, I'm Margo.
Thank you, Margo.
Representative Richardson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Margo Norton. I am with the Administrative Services Division of the Department of Justice. There are three buildings involved in the move. The Justice Building, which we currently occupy and is currently occupied by the Trial Division, the Dean's Building, which is currently occupied by administration, and the Commerce Building, which has been vacant for 2 years while it's been under renovation. Our Trial Division will move to the Commerce Division. There are 85 positions in the Commerce Division. In addition, there is space in the Commerce Building that will be used by a limited number of other division members during the renovation of the Justice Building so that we won't have to lease additional space.
Okay. The Justice Building is the current building you're in now?
We are currently in two buildings, the Deems Building, the private space, and the Justice Building.
Okay. That's where the Trial Division is in Justice Building right now?
Trial Division is in the Justice Building.
Okay. And then the new Commerce Building will be receiving the Trial Division. Those that are in the Dean's Building will remain in the Dean's Building?
We will remain in the Dean's Building during the renovation of the Justice Building and then leave the Dean's Building in approximately December 2006 and move to the Justice Building.
And then what happens to the Dean's Building?
The Dean's Building is privately leased. The owners will determine the fate of the building.
I see. So in the new Commerce Building, there will be 85 employees from the Trial Division plus any others?
Yes. A copy center that's operated by the Department of Administrative Services will be permanently located to the Commerce Building. It's presently in the basement of the Justice Building. There will be two units housed in the Commerce Building during the renovation of Justice, one of the General Counsel units until they can return, and our mailroom will be located there until they can return to the Justice Building.
That's going to pay any portion of the common space since they're going to have a portion of the building for their copy center?
Representative Richardson, members of the committee, the rental agreement during the renovation is rather complex, and we will continue to pay the rent that we pay, and DAS will pay for any additional space. We have, for example, storage space that has to be acquired during the pendency of the construction. But there are during the construction portions of the building that are unusable because of the construction, there'll be some credit. It's a rather extensive calculation that's headed up by the DAS construction team.
Okay. And just to bring you up to speed, can you tell me what the footage is of the new Commerce Building?
I'm sorry, I can't, but I'd be happy to provide that.
Any other questions? On this line. Well, Representative
Mr. Chair, this from earlier, I mean, this is a project that has been underway for some time.
Yeah.
It's, we kind of got this the earlier rendition of this committee got into this in midstream. I think this is a project that's been committed to and is well into completion and actually will complete sometime in July.
I understand. I just wanted to get brought up to
speed. I understand. It's just.
I know that. I mean, it's already.
Mr. Chair, the.
Well, the years, right?
I'm sorry.
Representative Wisnack.
Well,
go ahead.
And then Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this goes back to what I would suggest from your position and the co-chair's position, we're not going to be able to do it this session, but during the interim, I think that there needs to be some work groups with DAS facilities management and look at the overall picture of where our space is, how much is available, who's in lease facilities. This is a big business if you can see the cost of this one here. And I'm not sure that because it's so many different pieces, I don't feel comfortable that knowing that the taxpayers' money is being spent wisely, especially when we're spending the teachers' standard and practice commission is in a lease building on the river for 10 years lease we can't get out of now, and we've got space available in other government buildings, and that's I'm concerned about that and my responsibilities and for the taxpayers. So again, I think as Representative Hanna said, this project is we were briefed on, we did not get into detail because it was in work, should have probably been completed sooner than it is. But we should look, someone in the legislation should look with the DAS facilities management at the overall building facilities, what we have, what we're leasing, how much space is available to get maximum utilization out of that and eliminate as much as possible any outside leases if we have space available.
Although in this instance, the price is going up with the
it's all internal. It's just the TAS money.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope these comments don't sound harsh because they're not meant to be. But my first session in the legislature, and this is my fourth term, the significant issue at that point was discussions of building a new justice building. And I was serving on the general government subcommittee chaired by Representative Butler, and that plan was set aside because of a whole bunch of issues that as a freshman I didn't completely understand. I think I understand them better now. There was a great deal of pressure put on by the real estate community in Salem to keep us in lease space rather than building our own space. That plan for the new justice building made a great deal of sense. I wish we'd went ahead with it 8 years ago. We'd have a building that could house the department under one roof. It would have been an expensive project, but nevertheless it would have been paid for over a long period of time. And it would have made sense in terms of long-term buildings that we know we're going to need. It probably makes more sense for the state to own them rather than to lease them. Now, after that 180-degree change in that policy, I'm sure this policy to move with the Commerce Building was the alternative. Probably we would have been better off if we'd stuck with number one, but now we went to number two. I guess what I'm saying is every 2 years or every 4 years, as political winds blow and change, for us to change the strategies make no sense whatsoever. The other one is sometimes it's incredibly unfair to be comparing like DAS rental rates with existing rates when leases are getting ready to expire. And if we stay there, we'd have to be renegotiating a new lease. You don't have there's no way that we're going to have the numbers in front of us in terms of what the new lease would cost. And it could very easily be more than this work has cost. Coupled with the fact that it just start, then when you start shifting
using three and four properties and shifting people around in the various remodel costs, it's an expensive process. But it's transitional. A lot of these costs are transitional in terms of the upgrades of both Commerce Building and Justice Building. And there were some maintenance issues and stuff there that go back 40 years that would probably have been probably put off for a decade or more. And so there's a lot of catching up. And it's good to try and understand it and understand the facts and stuff now. And I don't fault anybody for that. But by the same token, a lot of the things that were set in motion on this set of decisions occurred 8 years ago. Or I guess it's 6.5 years ago. And if we rethink it every 2 years on projects that take more than 2 years to complete, then we run into problems.
Just to kind of clarify anything that may have been confusing, my questions are not at all directed toward changing anything, but I am in favor of full disclosure as to what the people are getting. And now every time you move 85 people, it's a huge expense to try moving an office with 10 people, let alone a whole division. And now there's a move, and then there's going to be another move, and all of this has huge cost to people out of tax dollars. And so I just don't know if the numbers have been laid out. This is what we're doing. Because I think to restore trust in government, one of the things that we need to do initially is to have more transparency in the way that we are handling things and in the costs that we are incurring, so that we can show that it's being done in a very reasonable, cost-efficient manner, or if it's not, that be disclosed so that the next project will be more carefully watched. And I have no knowledge about this project at all. I'm new into this part of the budget. And so I am not implying anything. I only have very fundamental questions because I have no experience. Okay.
Mr. Chair, that on that particular package on page 7 of 32 on the second page of the worksheet, the next package is package 104. This is a package that creates a chief information officer, and this particular position is created by eliminating two lower-level positions, one in this division and one that is transferred into this division from child support. And he actually, after the PERS adjustments and other things, save a little bit of money by doing this. So...
saving money. That's good.
One of the reasons they're doing this is this agency has grown significantly, mainly because of its increasing child support functions, which is highly dependent on information systems, just by the nature of the work and the computer system. So they felt that they needed a person that could dedicate a high-level management position that dedicated its focus on the information systems. Package 106, you'll see this package in a few divisions, and you'll see it ever by any of them. This is one that allocates the costs after taking a look at how costs are allocated across the agency for central services. And in this case, there is a reduction within this division in those costs for the central services. The LFO recommendation in this one is to accept the package with a slight adjustment to take care of a problem in the governor's budget. There's a negative $1,500 correction in another division to offset that.
Questions on that one?
Page 8 of 32, the top package there is the LFO usual PERS and Attorney General rate decrease. On the Attorney General rate, just so you have, the Joint Committee had approved the rate decrease from $119 an hour in the governor's budget to $111. This agency, because of the way they do their charging for their attorneys, because this is the Attorney General's office, accounts for a very large share of the total amount of Attorney General's costs across state government. I'll deal with that later when you get into a couple of the other divisions.
Mr. Chair.
Wasn't that
Since the chair is from this profession, I thought, Doug, you may want to tell him that it is an increase in the rate for attorneys. Went up from what? Didn't it go up from 90?
$98 is the current rate.
So you'll know we're looking after the profession.
That's actually a pretty low rate. But it doesn't include overhead. Maybe it does.
Mr. Chair, it does include the overhead cost and limited numbers of support staff that'll go along with the attorneys. So it is actually a relatively reasonable cost when you look at when they have to contract out for special types of attorney services where they don't have the expertise. It is often double or more than the going rate that they charge.
I can understand that.
Mr. Chair, but I'm asking for Representative Ackerman's help on a project, and he tells me his rate as a legislator is $7.22.
Well, shoot, that's a buy. I'm sure he's worth every penny of it and more.
Mr. Chair, the member subcommittee, the final package, 811, is purely a correction. The budget that was put together, the budget development assumed the transfer of, I believe it was 23 positions from child support to this division in terms of consolidating the information systems, and they forgot to pick up two of those positions, so they need to, we're correcting that in this budget, and that's package 811. Mr. Chair, that concludes the administration. If you go back to your memo real quick, page 2 of the memo, there is a budget note that we are recommending. Again, as I mentioned earlier, this budget note has been approved by the co-chairs, and it is purely making sure on the record that the Department of Justice move away from using reduction of expenditures in their accounting system and charging internally with billings and agency expenses. Excuse me. And they are one of the few agencies that still use this reduction of expenses way of accounting, and the Department of Administrative Services, the keeper of the accounting system, desires that they move away from this and practices that is generally used across state government, and so they conform with the rest of the state government. So they will be working with Budget and Management Division, the Accounting Division, as well as our office in the interim in getting this taken care of, and the next budget will reflect this type of the accounting that is done for all of state government except for a few agencies.
Representative Henson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doug, will that have any impact? Can we expect any kind of an impact on the Attorney General rate next biennium because of the accounting changes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, no, I don't believe you will, because it's all internal of the agency.
Okay.
What will happen, and their budget will actually go up in terms of the limitation, because some of the expenses will be double counted. And this is the case in many agencies, or most agencies, that have charges against their divisions. And when you see the final numbers of the state budget, DAS and LFO try to estimate that double counting, and it does, you know, count up. In fact, DAS itself is mainly financed by charging other agencies. And so when you see the state budget as it finally comes out, there's some type of estimate of what that double counting is across state government, as well as we will try to do that with the Department of Justice. Mr. Chair, that concludes our recommendations on the administration section or division.
Any questions on those items, packages that we've reviewed so far?
Mr. Chair, thank you.
Okay, the chair would accept a motion on the packages that we've reviewed thus far. Is the motion to add them to the amendment to the bill itself?
I think, Mr. Chair, at this stage, just a motion to accept the LFO recommendations would probably be in order, and then at the end we'll make the formal recommendation.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would make a motion that the committee accept LFO's recommended changes to the governor's recommended budget for DOJ administration, including the budget note.
Representative Hanlon has made a motion that we accept LFO's recommendations to date, and I would like to have us go ahead and review the numbers of those packages that we're approving. So if you could amend your motion and add to it the actual numbers.
Would you like me to include the package numbers in the motion?
Please.
Shall I go
yes,
ahead? All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That would include package number 090, package 103, package 104, package 106, package 801, and package 811.
The motion has been made by Representative Hanna to accept the recommendations of LFO to the packages that he's just enumerated. Is there discussion? Is there objection? If not, then we accept those recommendations to this point.
Mr. Chair, moving on to the next division, which is the Civil Enforcement Division. The worksheet is page 11 of 32 and on page 3 of the memo. This division has a number of functions, being the enforced consumer protection charities and nonprofit gaming laws. They include the Medicaid fraud unit, which is required under the federal Medicaid rule or law. They prosecute termination of parental rights cases in the child welfare area, and they represent the state in child support orders, mental health commitments, and other matters, and they also protect the state's or represent the state's interests in bankruptcy cases or bankruptcy court. Moving back to the worksheet, package 090 is a reduction, general fund reduction. This was part of what a 10% reduction that was taken over many of the units in this department that have general fund in it. This is a 10% or roughly $44,000 reduction to the Medicaid fraud unit. Since this matches federal funds to about a 75-25% match rate, there is a corresponding decrease in federal funds as a result and a loss of one position.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doug, do we know, is there a number connected with each of the positions in the Medicare fraud unit in terms of how much general fund they bring back?
We could get an estimate. I mean, it varies on the type of position and from time period to time yeah. period, but we could get an estimate of that.
Okay, thank you.
Some of those, Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, some of those go back to the federal government because it's a split. Mm-hmm. Some of it stays within this unit. Some of it does go back to DHS, depending on the settlements. And this unit not only works in terms of fraud of individual Medicaid clients, but a lot of it deals with Medicaid provider fraud mm-hmm. also.
Is the package 090 a recommendation from the governor or from co-chairs?
This is the 090 package is always a recommendation of the governor. It's part of the governor's budget.
All right, okay. Good morning.
Good morning. And I'm just wondering how big a hit is that going to be on the ability to, I mean, how many people are prosecuting these cases now and how much of a cut is this in that group?
Checking how many people that are. Kevin, I'm not sure. Four people.
Four attorneys,
and then the support staff that goes along with it.
So this brings
it
to three.
It probably retains four attorneys, or you lose an investigator position, if I remember right. They will take, I mean, this will eat into their ability to do the investigations, and therefore also the prosecutions in the Medicaid fraud mm-hmm. arena.
Follow up.
I mean,
is that increasing then? These cases increasing? Is this going to do the two steps forward, one or two steps back and one step forward?
Mr. Chair, Representative, excuse me, Boone, I believe they're increasing because the Medicaid program itself is increasing mm-hmm. significantly, as this committee will probably either know already or will know in the future. When you get to DHS's budget, So in terms of, I'm not sure if the number, if the proportion of fraud cases to the program is increasing. That I'd have to check on. I'm not sure.
See, DHS There's also has their investigators as well. Mm-hmm. This is just DOJ.
And this is a federally required unit that is part of the Medicaid law at the federal level.
Thank you.
Moving on, Mr. Chair, package 106 is that package that is in many of the divisions, which is purely just making sure that the allocation of the central services are properly spread throughout the department. So in this case, the general fund increase in this is $2,000. Package 301 is an enhancement to their estates program unit. This is required, and I'm moving on to the next page, because of workload increases and the change in the probate laws for the Department of State Lands, where they must represent the estates when there is no heir, can be readily identified or located. And also, the Department of State Lands must provide written notification, and there are some legal issues involved in those written notification or written approvals when someone other than the heir is filing a probate for a small estate. And also, there is an increase in the need or workload from the Department of Human Services side, where the state or Department of Human Services clients, where their estates are being examined and as part of the probate process. This particular package increases three positions, two attorneys, and one legal secretary, and the funding for this position comes from the legal billings to those two agencies, and they're increasing workload in this area. Package 801, again, is the LFO PERS and AG rate decrease package, so you're saving a total of $218,000 between those two changes. And the final package in this division is package 811. Anywhere you see a general fund, the co-chair plan includes a 3% reduction. So since there is a relatively small amount of general fund as part of the Medicaid fraud unit, you're seeing a $2,399 recommended reduction in their S&S expenditures. That concludes the policy packages, but I do need to raise one other issue that the subcommittee, the joint subcommittee, talked about in some detail. Part of this division is the consumer fraud or financial fraud consumer protection unit within the department. This is the primary consumer protection unit within state government. It had general fund roughly $2 million end of the 2001-03 session or biennium. As part of the budget, that was stripped from the budget by the 2003 legislature, and they've had to rely on settlements and other factors or other income, including their beginning balance, to make this program continue. They have discontinued some of their functions because of the availability of funds, and by the end of this 05-07 biennium, they will have no beginning balance to carry forward into the 07-09 under current estimates. In fact, there is a good possibility that they will, unless they watch their expenditures and their staffing patterns, will run out of funds by the last few months of this current biennium. So they will have to take some actions. There are some alternatives. There are a couple bills in the discussions. House Bill 3125, which is a dedicated business registration or registry fee, as well as Senate Bill 216, which is dedication on fluid recoveries. I do not believe any of these bills are moving real quickly through the process and probably have some issues that will make their passage difficult. The other alternatives are sort of reductions or changes in practice. One is to reduce consumer education and outreach. Another is to redirect staff to cases which affect groups of people and not individual consumers, so they get their biggest bang or at least the biggest number of people affected by their actions. And they also will likely discontinue certain types of cases, like email, spam, something that I wish they'd spend more time on personally, because I'm spending last night at home on my computer, and or junk faxes. So this is just to raise this issue. There's no recommended solution at this time other than to provide the Attorney General and the Department of Justice as much flexibility to sort of address the looming shortfall. My guess is they'll come back next biennium and request general fund for the 07-09 biennium if they do not get any of this biennium.
Mr. Chair.
What's that?
I speak up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the presentations, we all were impressed with this and what it's doing for our citizens. I've actually had them come over to Redmond and talk about this. With all the emphasis on ID theft right now, it might be worth taking back to the co-chairs, recommend to you or to our co-chair, and say if Department of Justice has any sort of bottom line of assistance. Because I guess my follow-up question is, do we know, Mr. Wilson, if all the stuff we see on TV about ID theft and everything, is that federally funded, and how do we play into that? Because this is, especially for seniors and the most vulnerable of our society, it's a real hot issue button right now, is ID theft. And I think
is ID theft part of financial fraud and consumer protection program?
Mr. Chair, I believe it is. I don't know if the Attorney General wants to address this or at all.
Chair Richardson, members of the subcommittee, Hardy Myers, Attorney General. I think that the principal role of the Financial Fraud Consumer Protection Section as it relates to ID theft has been more of an educational resource and a kind of information and referral resource of consumers in terms of helping them both connect with law enforcement, very important, as well as providing them information with regard to how to interact with the credit reporting services, what steps to take in order to try to minimize the likelihood of being victimized, as well as to try to expedite the process of getting straightened out once victimization has occurred. And an educational component, which is contracting as part of the general education pullback, of trying to inform consumers about steps to take in order to minimize their exposure to ID theft.
You have questions on that?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Follow-up to Attorney General.
Mr.
Attorney General, what is which agency is really on top of that? State police? Are they the lead agency for ID theft? Or?
Chair Richardson, Representative Wisnant, I don't know that there is a single agency that one could say is predominantly on top of it. There has been an interagency working group of which DOJ has been part, which has sought to both identify needed law changes to help with the prevention and prosecution of identity theft, as well as to try to foster interagency law enforcement teams, including both state and local law enforcement. So the effort to respond to ID theft has truly spanned a number of agencies who have been trying to work collaboratively.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Attorney General, the comment that legislative fiscal office has provided us says the Attorney General would like to maintain the greatest degree of flexibility in dealing with this, and is expected the agency to report next time. But I guess you'll keep the agency open or the function open with what money you have, and come back to the e-board or to us next year. Or is there a bottom line that this we could recommend to our chair, our subcommittee chair, that go back to our chair that you really need to keep this working? Again, I think it's an important function for our senior citizens, especially because, like I said, they came over and talked to my people in Redmond, our constituents, and I was impressed with their programs.
Chair Richardson, Representative Wisnant, absent infusion of new resources for this coming biennium, I said to the joint subcommittee in our earlier phase two review, I'm not going to let the program run to the cliff. We will take steps, orderly steps, in terms of program action, contracting program action, managing vacancies. I hope to ultimately avoid layoff or transfer of personnel to other parts of the department, but that also could be an ultimate fallback in order to provide us an opening balance for next biennium that would be at a responsible level. It would be of enormous help if the legislature could infuse some amount of additional resources for this coming biennium. Now, I'm understanding of the general fund situation, but it would be my hope, just to be completely candid with the subcommittee, that when the total amount of savings from the different budgets, at least in the area of which we're part, Department of Justice, have been accumulated, it would be the decision of the Assembly to invest a portion of those back into this program to give it some additional support during the coming 2 years. I wouldn't envision anything like a $2 million general fund restoration, but a restoration of even a portion of that, Representative Wisnett, could be very helpful. And quite candidly, Representative Wisnett, while the report notes a couple of other legislative efforts that have been mounted to identify and create those resources, they don't appear to have any prospect of movement. And I do think in the near term, some restoration of general fund would be the most workable kind of option that the Assembly has.
All right, thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This whole issue is almost tragic because, one, these can be incredibly important services for some of our sort of disenfranchised citizens, the people that don't read the fine print sometimes on subscription lists or cell phone sales agreements, these types of things. And that's not real. Helping those types of people don't bring a lot of cash flow into the agency. There's also some issues that do. It would be tragic if they had to triage their help for people based on what kind of returns it's going to bring back to the Attorney General's office to support the program. That's where the general fund is needed. The other thing is how strategically we plant a little bit of general fund money or some general fund money in order to stabilize the department, so we're not faced in a situation of having to move good personnel that have developed really expertise in this work, having to transfer them to something else and then hopefully transfer them back at the start of the next biennium of the general fund. It seems like we have the potential to destabilize a pretty well-run working program, and I think that would be tragic. So I really hope that we can continue to look for some kind of general fund to supplement this before we end up going home. Yeah, and I'll put a plug for 3125. It was brilliantly conceived myself.
Chair Richardson, I didn't mean by my comments about the pending legislative initiatives not to suggest they weren't good ideas. I think they're wonderful.
I have a question about the funding where it talks about there's been $3 million and that future funding depends to some extent on recoveries from settlements from businesses. Would you describe what relationship there is to settlements obtained by the department and revenue that you use for this program?
Chair Richardson, in the absence of general fund support, the entirety of the program's funding rests on revenue that comes into the Consumer Protection and Education Revolving Account, and those revenues are derived from payments in the context of settlements that are made with the department, payments of enforcement costs, including attorney's fees. If and to the extent civil penalties were imposed, and they're not very common, those actually go into the general fund by statute. So all of the funding of the program, absent general fund, is derived from the provisions of settlements that call for payment into the revolving account of the enforcement costs of the department in that proceeding.
That's what I want to get to. Yeah. Is we're talking about costs and disbursements, reimbursement, not if we settle with this guy and we get $100,000, it's going to boost our resources for administering this program. So the actual dollars obtained in a settlement go to general fund, but those amounts that are allocated toward attorney's fees go to you. Is that, am I correct with that, or is it different?
Chair Richardson, the whether or not a portion of a settlement goes to the general fund will depend on the particular case. The national tobacco settlement is probably the most dramatic example of a case in which the non-enforcement, non-DOJ part of the settlement does go to the general fund. But in many settlements, the portion that does not go into the revolving account for the enforcement costs of the department will be distributed as restitution to consumers. I think far more often than it will go into the general fund. I think the general fund probably will be an exception rather than the rule, so to speak.
Okay. I see. Thank you. Other questions? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, that concludes the Civil Enforcement Division recommendations.
Are there questions about Civil Enforcement Division?
What level of funding would be, I mean, obviously it couldn't be the whole $3 million, but what level would be reasonable and not cut it too short?
Well, they've already indicated that he's not going to let it shut down.
Right.
He has the ability to come forward to the e-board if there's a need in the future. If they do get short of money, there's greater expenditures than expected. There's no specific request at this point for additional funds, although as a wise person, as soon as Representative Wisnett mentions about bringing it up, he says we could use additional money, and that's expected. The governor's not recommending it. The co-chair's not recommending it, and so there is no set dollar amount that's being requested.
No, I understand that. I was just, what would be a reasonable amount if pennies from heaven should fall? How does one determine that level of, you know, to do that, and so that it's not just nothing? And I guess we'll just make sure I'm talking about the right thing, the beginning balance.
Mr. Chair, Representative Boone, put things in perspective. The beginning balance are those settlement monies that the Attorney General just talked about. To answer the other question, first of all, the settlements are almost impossible to predict from, because you don't know what's going to settle. You just have to use averages. To put things in perspective, there was roughly $2 million of general fund in this program until last session when it was totally stripped out. And that would give you some perspective. I would, you know, if you wanted to add some back, could convince the parties in the legislature, I don't think you'd have to have entire $2 million. To be honest, I think the Attorney General would say anything would help, mainly to stabilize the program.
Are you saying that the $2 million was taken out and used elsewhere?
Yes.
It was drained?
Yes.
I guess my question was just, you know, if we put in 100,000, would that do more harm than good?
Mr. Chair, Representative Boone, it wouldn't do any harm. Mm-hmm. I think if you were to stabilize the program, put it on long-term footing, you would need more than $100,000.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, well, we could accept the motion to accept this recommendation.
So moved, Mr. Chair. Did we accept the... what are we doing here? The criminal?
Civil enforcement.
Civil enforcement division with the packages of 90, 106, 301, 801, and 811.
Okay, Representative Wisnett has moved that we accept the LFO recommendations for the packages that he has enumerated. Is there discussion on that? Is there any objection? LFO recommendations are accepted. Director of Civil Enforcement Division.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, the next division on page 4 of the memo and page 14 of 32 on the worksheet is the Criminal Justice Division. This will have the most number of packages. A number of these packages are all wrapped up in the criminal fines and assessment, or CFAA, issue, which I'll walk through. Just a note on the memo on page 4, in the table at the top, it has 87, in the LFO recommendation, it says 87 positions and 86.84. It should be 93 positions and 89.3. I forgot to type in the new numbers when I finished the worksheet. So just for your reference sake, again, that's 93 positions and 89.3 FTE.
And during the course of your presentation, you'll identify where those
are. Actually, the worksheet was right. When I typed them into this table on the memo, you didn't get them right. So if you go by the worksheet, it's fine.
Okay, I'm looking at the worksheet. I'm seeing 86.
Actually, the number you need to take a look at is at the bottom of this division on page 20, the last box there at the bottom of page 20 of 32. You'll see the 93 and the 89.3 in the bottom right-hand corner, those two numbers. The numbers at the top on page 14 are the governor's printed budget or recommended budget, these numbers here.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, in the Criminal Justice Division, this is a division that has a number of functions. They assist district attorneys. They include the organized crime section of the that deals with criminal and terrorism-related activities, organized criminal activities, and it also includes the Crime Victims Assistance Program, which receives CFAA funding in the past, as well as federal funds to pay out through a number of programs, including the CAMI program to victims of crimes.
CFAA stands for what?
Criminal Fines and Assessment. Package 070, again, this is a governor's recommended package. This is the first of a number of CFAA packages that we'll walk through because things have changed. And this is sort of from this package all the way to about the last package that is part of this division, things will change. This package, there was an identified revenue shortfall in the CFAA funding that would have meant a cut of 28% in the CFAA funding in terms of the crime victims programs. In this package, it represents the reduction.
Mr. Wilson, I thought the co-chairs disagreed with taking this out. We're going to keep the...
That is right, Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett. By the time I get done, I'll walk through the steps.
Okay.
Trying to keep them separated because there's a fund shift, there's cuts, reductions, and depending at the end of the day, I want to make sure things are separated so it's easy to take care of.
Thank you.
So this is the first step.
Thank you.
This was the worst step in terms of the funding for the program in the governor's budget.
The governor taketh away, co-chairs put it back.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson, for that explanation.
Yeah, package 090 at the top of the next page 15. This is a reduction to the general funded programs, just like the Medicaid fraud. The general fund programs that are part of this division, which is DA assistance and the organized crime programs, are reduced by a total of just over $1 million. Part of that is also to the Oregon Sexual Assault and Domestic Violence Services programs, which is restored by the co-chairs when we get to that point in the process. Again, this is a governor's recommended. We're recommending approval at this time just as part of the stage as we walk through this. By the time you get done, some of these funds will be restored. Package 096, again, this is in the governor's budget, was this fund shift that he did going from CFA funded to general fund. In the past, or as it currently sets out in the 0305 biennium, criminal fines and assessment CFA comes in to the state, and it is divided between the general fund and something called the public safety account of CFAA. It's a roughly a 66% general fund and 33% CFA public safety. What the governor proposed was putting it all in the general fund and then appropriating general fund monies totally to those programs that had been CFA. This is the package that makes that change. The co-chairs disagreed with that change, and then a later package, it is switched back. Again, we're recommending approval just as a step in the budget development process. Package 106, again, this is one of those administrative offset for interagency charges, shoring up and making sure that the charges between the agencies for central services are allocated properly across the department. And this is where in the admin section or division I talked about a $1,500 correction. This is the flip side of that correction, this package. Going on to the next page, page 16 at the top, this is package 401 at the top. It doesn't say 401 on the top of that page, but this is a package number. This adds to the intelligence capacity of the state as it relates to terrorism activities. One of the primary functions that DOJ plays in the criminal justice and the public safety arena is they are sort of the focus of intelligence gathering for the state. They work very closely with the Oregon State Police, with local law enforcement, and others as a partner in that system, and they provide intelligence, central intelligence gathering. And in this case, they are adding a position funded through a Homeland Security grant that comes from originally from the federal government, and this adds to the capacity of the Oregon State Intelligence Network. We recommend approval of this package, except that we recognize that these funds can no longer be used after, I believe it's November of 2005 of this year for staff. That's a federal requirement, and so they will be sort of juggling within the program, and they will use these funds to buy equipment and other services, but not staff. And the staff will be funded from existing resources that had been going for equipment purchases that they already had.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wilson. I think I'm not out of order this time.
Okay.
On package 401.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. We're going to add a position, but that position is only 0.21 FTE, and it's $169,550. So that's a $500,000 position. That's $250,000 a year.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wilson, it has to do with the prohibition of using these funds for staff positions starting in November 2005. So actually, internally, you're using... This money comes in that you can use it for that position until November, and then you can't use it anymore based on federal rules. And so internally of the program, the funds they already have in hand will be used for that staff position, and the new money will be used for equipment purchases. So you'll only the 0.21 only represents the increased staffing for that period of time up to November.
So, Mr. Chair, follow-up.
Follow-up.
How would we know, Doug, that that's equipment involved in that? How would?
Because I asked the agency and
thank you
and to get that information. And I believe there's some other services beyond equipment also, if I'm not mistaken.
On the notes, that's so.
Yeah.
Okay.
Package 402, again, this is another increase in terms of intelligence, but this is not terrorism-related as much as it's criminal and drug-related. The funds being used for this increase are from the HIDA, or High Intensity Drug Trafficking Area. These are funds that come in to the state and are used by the state police, the Department of Justice, and local law enforcement drug-related activities. This adds two positions, a research analyst one, which is the basic intelligence staff, as well as an electronic technician two, which will deal with sort of some electronic related matters in terms of intelligence. One of the functions of this This money will be used to support or oversee the methamphetamine chemical precursor database that is being developed. We suggest the approval of this package after making a change for PERS. The next package is package 406. The governor recommended this budget to increase the ability of the DA assistance program and to a secondary impact or affect the organized crime unit to give them sufficient support. Currently, there are only two support positions between the DA assist program, the organized crime unit, and this package would add another support position. That would free up the time of folks in those two divisions to do work that isn't support in nature, but more intelligence gathering or assisting DAs across the state. The funding for this position will be from billing the various programs or other agencies. We recommend the approval of this package after adjusting for the PERS rate. The next package, 411, was recommended in the governor's budget. I'm now on page 17. This is another one of those steps in the CFA package. This restores a portion of the cut that the governor made from a 28% cut to a 10% cut. So this is another step in that returning the funding to almost full level for CFA. It is still here as other funds, and it's moving through the process. Package 801 is our standard recommended package for PERS and the AG rate, and this totals just a bit over $340,000 total funds at this point. Package 802 is the co-chair's recommended 3% cut to services and supplies, and this totals $150,000 in this division.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to hear from the department in terms of all of the 802 packages, whether there are any similar problems to the one we heard in, or potential for similar problems as we heard with Youth Authority, if they've got some disproportionately high services and supply costs that if the 3% might interfere with doing what they really need to do.
Mr. Chair, if I may suggest, I think that best addressed, and it is a major concern when they get to the Defense of Criminal Convictions Unit.
Okay.
I think actually that is where their biggest concern is. I agree with them that it is a significant program cut. So that's a few more units down the line, and I think it probably better discussed at that point.
Fine. Only need to do it once.
Okay. Package 810, which is at the top of page 18, this is a package, one of those items that came in as a funding or as a program after the governor's budget had been finalized. This is the DUII prosecution initiative grant. It comes from ODOT, but is originally federal money from the Federal Highway Safety Funding. Basically, this position, this grant would add a position and provide special for providing special training and assistance to DA prosecutors, deputy DAs across the state, other law enforcement agencies to improve DUI prosecutions. Again, this is federal money that has come into the state. Package 811, another series of these funding grants or whatever it might be called that have come in since the governor's budget was finalized. This money comes from the Western States Information Network. This is a network of, I'm not sure how many states, it's like five or six states on the West Coast. California, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Nevada, I believe, are all part of them. They share intelligence. They have a central database and a central staff that shares intelligence with law enforcement agencies in those states. The Western States Information Network has made money available to the department since DOJ is the Oregon representative for that. This money would be used to provide support information system support across the state to the various local law enforcement agencies. Package 812 at the top of page 19. This package continues a grant that was originally approved by the emergency board in the current biennium. This deals with the Oregon Victims' Rights Compliance Project. It continues that grant that was originally part of the current 0305 biennium, continues and uses the remaining money, $75,000, during the 0507 budget. It funds two positions, but you'll notice that it contemplates the money running out because it only funds 0.75 FTE. They may very well apply for a federal grant again in the future. The funds are used to address compliance issues around victims' rights and making sure that victims are informed and are able to go after the money that they are entitled to in the crimes victims arena. Package 813, again, this is a continuation of a grant that was originally awarded during 2004. This is the Internet Crimes Against Children's Grant. These would fund two limited duration investigators and would help the state in pursuing crimes against kids via the Internet. One of these positions is located in the Portland in a federal Internet sort of technical center, and the other is a regular investigator that will be in part surfing the net for these kinds of crimes and taking active investigating for prosecution of Internet crimes against children. This is a growing area as the Internet becomes larger, more extensive, more available. Unfortunately, one of the outcomes of that is there's a lot more Internet crimes, pornography, that type of thing against children being enabled through the net. Package 814. This package, another one of the CFA packages, this is restores almost to essential budget levels the CFA funding to the various programs, including the Sexual Assault and Domestic Violence Services Program. This package adds almost $1.6 million by the co-chairs to these. This is both in the House and the Senate budget plans. They did agree. And then finally, package 815, this is the package, again another CFA package, then that reverses the move the governor proposed that takes all CFA money, puts it in the general fund, and then appropriates it out. The co-chairs decided, and again this is on both sides of the House and the Senate, to continue the way it is right now, and all this will be CFA funded. One of the bills that you'll see later on in session is a bill that allocates all of the CFA money to the various programs. These are the expenditure limitations. There has to be another bill that allocates the money to the various programs. And you'll see that toward the end of session. And that, Mr. Chair, concludes the Criminal Justice Division. On page 5 of the memo, at the top of page 5, there are just a couple issues that I want to make sure you're aware of. They don't affect the packages or the budget at this time, but may be still under consideration by the legislature that could be added later on in session to an end-of-session bill or another bill. There's still interest in the Tobacco Tax Compliance Task Force. These are the Oregon State Police, the Department of Revenue, and the Department of Justice going after those various firms, including over the Internet, that are selling tobacco products without the benefit of the state collecting the taxes on them. There's still discussion of adding back some positions in various agencies for this effort. It's not part of the recommendation at this time. There's also a methamphetamine-related package. I think there's, on the House side, there's a little over $5 million. It is very possible that some of that money could be directed at the Department of Justice. It is still out there being, I think, legislative counsel is working on a two-bill package that the judiciary committees have jointly working on in the caucuses. And finally, Senator Gordley has Senate Bill 301, which relates to the use of deadly force. And if that bill passes, there is the possibility of two positions, part-time positions, or one position divided between two functions coming back as part of the DOJ budget that could be added later. These three items are not recommended at this time, but are only there for your consideration or knowledge that they still could be part of the process during this session. And, Mr. Chair, that concludes my presentation and recommendation of the Criminal Justice Division.
Okay, the questions on the presentation relating to the DOJ Criminal Justice Division. I thought the Chair would accept entertain a motion relating to the various numbered packages.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Henson. Excuse me, Hannah.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I would recommend to the committee LFO's recommended changes to the Governor's recommended budget for the Criminal Justice Division, including packages 070, 090, 096, 106, 401, 402, 405, 411, 801, 802, 810, 811, 812, 813, 814, and 815.
Representative Hanna has recommended that we accept the recommendations from LFO relating to the enumerated packages which he set forth. Is there discussion on that motion? Is there any objection? And these recommendations relating to DOJ Criminal Justice Division are accepted.
Mr. Chair, the next division is the General Counsel Division. This is on page 5 of the memo and page 22 of 32 of the worksheet. Not quite as many packages as the criminal justice, thank goodness, for my voice. I'm fine. The General Counsel Division is basically the legal counsel for state government. This is a set of attorneys that work in various specialties and agency groups. Well, thank you very much. And there's really only one package other than the LFO PERS related package, and that deals with the child welfare representation of DHS. That package, which is 451, is not part of the House co-chair budget, and so at this time it is not recommended in this budget. I think both the human service side and the public safety side for DOJ heard presentations by both human services and Department of Justice to the need of to what they feel that their need of this package is. And if you have any questions, I'd be glad to go in more detail, but it is not part of the co-chair's budget.
I do have a question about that. And just, Doug, maybe you could just kind of outline, since I wasn't privy to that.
I'm sorry, I forgot.
Okay, yeah. Why that would not be recommended, because just for the fact that it's being in a court and the DHS workers are usually not attorneys.
Mr. Chair, Representative Boone, I'm not sure if I can address it, why it's not a part. I think it's probably a matter of priority setting within the total budget. This package would have added 19 positions, most of which are attorney positions, to provide that representation. Currently, the representation of DHS in the courts is roughly at about 5% of the cases. The addition of this staff would have increased it to roughly 15%. And you're right, they are not attorneys, and some judges are having some difficulty having the Department of Human Service workers sort of act in the capacity they are acting. I'm not sure. I think maybe some of the other members of the subcommittee may have some comments about that, too.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Boone, another piece to this, and we had a great deal of discussion about this, both with the Department of Justice and from the DHS side of this piece, because it comes together. You know, one of the items that package 451 from this side doesn't show is that in order to do this, there were in DHS you could lose up to 44 positions on that side. And so as the committee had discussions about, you know, who has been doing this, who will continue to do it, we weighed heavily on, gee, do you give up the folks who have been the advocates for the children that are there doing the job, though there is conflict over them not being legal folks? Is there a better method to get them the help they need? And also, from the district attorney's standpoint, though I don't think they would come in and say, gee, we're already doing this, the fact is, in many cases, they're standing right next to them, and they are providing that. So there's also been discussion about, you know, potentially, and this isn't in this, just for the discussion, funding them to a degree to help because they're already there. And there would be some cases where they could not because of the conflict, but this has had a great deal of discussion. I'm not certain that there isn't a better way to put it together, but as we weighed it out, I think at this point, this is the best we could say no, and let's come back to the table at some point and figure out a different plan, because I think we're going to run into more and more issues where true legal representation is needed, mm-hmm. and they're not, you know, they don't have it now, and either they've got to have some paralegal additional help or other ways to go about this.
Representative Henson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an incredibly complicated issue. There's one county, I think it's Linn County, the judges there have refused to hear cases unless DHS is represented by counsel. It's a problem that it's a real problem. We haven't found a wonderful solution yet, but I think we need to keep working and keep exploring it. I think probably the biggest problem for those of us that were serving on both human services and public safety in the old ways and means format was a concern that we were going to fund this at the expense of caseworkers. Mm-hmm. And God knows we've got enough cases appear in the front page of the Oregonian that decreasing the caseworkers certainly isn't the answer. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if there's certainly opportunities to increase the effectiveness of caseworkers if they're not spending a lot of time in court or spending a lot of time preparing legal documents. So it's a real struggle. I wish we could spend more time on it in terms of the possible involvement of some district attorneys, possibly creating a pilot program to see whether if this was functioning in some DHS service areas, how much time were we freeing up for case managers. I don't support package 54-51. On the other hand, I sure see the problem, and I don't see there's not a good alternative either.
Well, I didn't know that it was a trade-off one or the other. And thank you. I wish I would have been a part of the discussion just to understand it better, but thank you very much.
The total amount at stake between the various budgets, I believe, is somewhere around $8.5 million, and it will increase the attendance by 10%. And it's been estimated between 50 and 80%. It would be nice to have that mm-hmm. representation. But so now you're talking $50 to $75 million. Mm-hmm. And so this is not going to be a good way to accomplish that. But everybody agrees that there does need to be something there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative, $8 million that the chair referred to included a significant amount of federal funds mm-hmm. because it is mm-hmm. it's a matchable expense. Mm-hmm. For using
Department
federal
DHS,
funds
yeah.
in DHS.
Oh, okay.
That's all tax money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Representative Henson.
If I could add, now, there's a potential, and I'm not sure where I heard this,
whether it was testimony or side conversations or what, but there's a potential, for example, in Linn County, where currently DOJ is involved in a lot of cases, there's a potential that the cases might move faster. Kids could get placed quicker if there's better or more legal work done, which could represent significant savings to the state, or at least offset some of the cost of this program. And that's why I would really like to see some type of pilot program or a phased-in approach to see really where the savings and where the costs are. But there are some potential offsets to the cost of this that could be helpful to us.
Further discussion on package 451.
Mr. Chair, is it possible to do a budget note to that effect? That and I don't know where that money would come from, or are there grants available or whatever? Or is that even appropriate at this point?
Well, it could be done. Both DHS and the DOJ are very much aware that this mm-hmm. is a problem. So the fact that 451 presently is not getting funded does not mean that it just gets dropped. The request has been for the two agencies to work together to come back with an alternative, okay. more sustainable, less expensive approach. And so
that's the same.
Yeah, that's there.
Mr. Chair, Representative Boone, really the 451 is the money, the original resources, and sort of the policy direction in large part rests as part of the DHS budget, and not necessarily, this is, DOJ comes along as the hired contractor in a sense mm-hmm. of those dollars, a very valuable contractor, but in terms of their legal representation of the department. Mr. Chair, then package 801 is the standard LFO recommendation for the PERS reductions for the staff in this division. Mr. Chair, on the bottom of page 5 of the memo, there's a suggested budget note. Just recently, the Department of Justice and the Department of Higher Ed entered into an agreement which authorized the university system to increase their number of employees that are designated by the Attorney General to provide legal support to the agency. State law requires the AG to be that legal provide that legal representation, legal services, unless he designates he or she designates someone in the agency to do that. They've entered an agreement where higher ed would increase their numbers. In our interest in the budget note, and actually this was an LFO suggested budget note to the co-chairs, to sort of measure the workload in both the Department of Justice and in higher ed to make sure that the amount of legal services provided that is continued to be provided, compared that to the previous biennia, the type of legal services, as well as the estimated savings in both DOJ and the higher ed system, and have them report back next session on that, so we can take a look at the staffing needs and the resulting staffing changes both at DOJ and higher education.
Are you saying that this is a new approach for higher ed? Is there a change in the way it's been done before?
It is, Mr. Chair, not necessarily a new approach, but an expansion of an approach would probably be the best way to put it. They have already had a few, and I can't remember how many, three, and we're increasing it by another two or three positions in terms of the designated where higher education can use their own employees to provide those legal services. Higher ed thinks they can save money by doing this. LFO still needs to be convinced of the amount of those savings, and that is one reason
okay.
for the budget note. And Mr. Chair, that completes the General Counsel Division.
Are there questions relating to the presentation on the General Counsel Division of DOJ's budget? Not, then we would entertain a motion. Mr. Hanna.
Mr. Chair, I would recommend LFO's recommended changes to the government's recommended budget as it relates to the Department of Justice General Counsel Division.
including package 451 and package 801, as well as a budget note relating to the Department of Justice and the Department of Higher Education.
Okay. Representative Hanna has recommended acceptance of LFO's recommendations relating to packages 451 and 801 and the recommended budget note on General Counsel Division for DOJ's budget. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Seeing none, those recommendations have been approved.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, the next division is the Appellate Division. Page 6 of the memo, page 9 of 32. This is out of sequence in the worksheet, but it tends to go along with the other portions of that agency. But page 9 just follows the General Counsel Division, so it should be the next page in your table. The Appellate Division represents the state in all cases that are appealed either through the state or federal courts, where the state is a party or has a specific or significant interest in the case. They spend a lot of their time preparing briefs and arguing appeals in all types of cases. In most of these cases, they appear before the Oregon Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court or the Federal Ninth Circuit Court, and in isolated cases, they may even appear before the U.S. Supreme Court. They also are those attorneys, sort of an added responsibility that does not get any specific funding. They are the attorneys that prepare the ballot and defend the ballot measure titles. The governor's proposed budget included package 202, which adds one half-time attorney position to respond to the number of cases and partially in response to a Supreme Court rule that makes cases move through the process a little quicker, does not allow as much delay or granting of delays by the attorneys to prepare their cases. So it is a workload issue and a timing issue. This additional resource will be used in civil cases and those where they can bill a specific agency or biller for these cases. We recommend the approval of that package after making the PERS adjustment. And then the only other package in this division is the standard 801 package, which is the PERS reduction of almost $53,000. And that, Mr. Chair, is the Appellate Division.
President Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. perhaps Attorney General Myers, if you could comment on the increased workload on this division as our capital punishment cases move into the federal appeal arena. Have we seen, will there be an increase in workload in that area, either this biennium or into the future?
Chair Richardson, Representative Hanson, I wonder if you might want to have that discussion under defense of criminal convictions.
Okay.
That would be agreeable to you.
Okay.
I'd be happy to respond.
Okay. Are there other questions about the Appellate Division? If not, Chair will accept the motion for acceptance of LFO's recommendations.
Mr. Chair, I would so move.
Representative Boone recommends that the LFO recommendations relating to package 202 and package 801 for the Department of Justice Appellate Division budget be accepted. Is there discussion? Seeing none, is there any opposition? Seeing none, recommendation is accepted. We now move on to the Trial Division.
Mr. Chair, the Trial Division is on page 6 of the document, and they have really only one package in the governor's budget. This is package 462, which adds a position in this case, or adds actually two positions, excuse me, and these are support positions to address the growing workload. They are adding support positions because they are cheaper than attorneys' positions, but will assist the attorneys and do work that the attorneys are currently doing that are more appropriate for legal secretaries to perform, freeing up the attorneys to work at the backlog of cases in the trial division. The division has been double filling a position to partially offset this workload, so they would really the net increase in terms of the resource available will be one position. We recommend approval of this package other than making a PERS weight, taking into account the PERS weight reduction. And the other package is 801, which deals with excuse me, with the PERS reduction also for the existing employees. And that represents about a $72,000 decrease.
Okay.
There is one issue I just raised at the top of page 7. I put it here, but it also affects the general counsel division, and that is there is nothing in this budget at this time that addresses the workload issues around Measure 37 and the AG's responsibilities. It's something that they are tracking and that they will use existing resources unless they become too significant, and then they will likely come back to either the emergency board or next section to ask for positions related to Measure 37. They have been using temporary positions or double-filled positions. There is no permanent positions at this time added in the budget.
It's more than a 10-foot. I'm looking to see the increase between the 03 and the 05. It's $1.2 million. We're adding two staff positions for a cost of under $200,000. And is that a standard current service level increase?
Yes, it is. Actually, Mr. Chair, it goes from 13.8 to 15.1 roughly, so it's not quite $2 million.
$1.2 million.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. That would be basically the increases mainly for staff related types of costs, whether they're salary, benefits, the type of roll-up costs that there are. I think that is the extent of that. I think you'd find similar increases in the other divisions along those lines.
Any other discussion relating to the trial division's recommendations? If not, we would entertain a motion acceptance of these LFO recommendations.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hanna.
I would recommend LFO's recommended changes to the governor's recommended budget as it applies to the Department of Justice Trial Division, including Package 462 and Package 801.
Representative Hanna has recommended we accept the LFO recommendations on the Trial Division portion of DOJ's budget, which includes Packages 462 and Package 801. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none. So moved.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, the next budget unit is the Defense of Criminal Convictions. This is really a budgetary unit that is used by the other divisions to provide the funding for a number of functions, but mainly for the defense of criminal convictions. Much of this funding is used to protect the state's interests or the position for those folks that may be appealing one of many different types of factors that are residents of the Department of Corrections facilities. For example, both the appeals and the trial division access these funds to provide those services. This is also where the ballot measure title work is funded out of in terms of the appellate division. Most of this is a general fund. The governor in package 090 reduced this amount by 10%. As a result, there have been growing backlogs in the past. This will only make the backlog problem that much more significant. That was package 090. Package 801 is the is the change in the AG rate, which this is actually, this unit is the largest AG line in the state government because it is almost entirely attorney general expenses that come out of this fund. And then package 811 is the House budget plan, 3% reduction. And as someone asked, this is a place to talk about that issue, as well as I think Representative Hansen's issue around capital cases. I will state that package 811, the 3% reduction, while that the 3% reductions was viewed in large part as an administrative reduction in many agencies, it is really a program reduction in this agency, because what you're cutting here are funding for basically the defense of various criminal convictions across the state. And I'm not sure if the Attorney General wants to address that, as well as Representative Hansen's question
Mr.
Chair, minutes ago.
Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before we go through that, Mr. Wilson, do you have the FTEs for this division?
Mr. Chair, there, and Representative Wisnett, there are no FTEs in this division. This is the division that in part funds the trial division and the appellate division. This is the general fund for those, that staff. And as they work on cases that have no agency to bill, which is primary the defense of criminal convictions, they use the general fund in this division to pay the cost of that staff.
Chair,
further explanation?
That's their bank for that.
Yes, this is a pot of money for the use by those attorneys.
All the other funding, my fault, Mr. Chair. All the other funding then came out of other funds that they charge different agencies, basically with a little bit of general fund, because I'm not looking at the overall sheet, I guess.
If you take a look at, for example, the appeals division, it's all other funds, and a large portion of that other funds is spending of the general fund in this account. It just makes the internal billing easier for the department.
Thank you. I understand.
Okay. Attorney General Meyer.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. Very briefly, first to the question Representative Wisnett just raised, to put numbers on that in the Defense of Criminal Conviction Program lawyer numbers, there are about 19.5 FTE on the appellate side of the Defense of Criminal Convictions and about 9 FTE attorneys on the trial division side of it.
Thanks.
State post-conviction. Chair Richardson, members, a couple of comments by me about this program area. First of all, I think it's worth recalling that in the joint subcommittee consideration of the department's budget earlier, when the department was asked to rank, prioritize its mission areas, and the subcommittee was asked to score those areas as well, both the department and the subcommittee scored defense of criminal convictions as the third most important mission area of the department, after legal services to state government and the child support program. So among our general fund programs, DCS was ranked first, but this was the next highest. The concern that I think the department was understanding that there was going to be, in all likelihood, a 10% reduction in the program, unless at the very end of the budget adjustment process some additional funds were made available. But this additional 3% reduction, Chair Richardson and members, is, as Mr. Wilson said, because of the way this program is structured, it is a significant additional program reduction, because this program is 100% budgeted as services and supplies. So whereas in a typical agency program area that services and supplies might be 20% of the budget, it's 100% of defense of criminal convictions. So a 3% reduction there is another 300. It's going to be another 3,500 hours of attorney time devoted to the defense of criminal convictions. A very significant further reduction. I don't know whether at this point, as a matter of just the practical unfolding of the budget process, the subcommittee can do anything about the issue. But I did want to make you very specifically aware of the way that cut impacts in an area like this compared to a great many of the program areas across state government. And it's my very respectful hope that if further reductions of services and supplies stay part of the 2005-2007 budget as finally negotiated by the House and the Senate, that there will be some steps taken to try to calibrate the level of those reductions by agency programs so that these differences in the impacts will be taken account of. Unless the legislature in fact wants to make a program cut as a result of that 3% reduction. To Representative Hansen's question for just a moment more, Mr. Chair and members, we are indeed on the verge of the first of our death penalty cases entering federal habeas corpus, which means that the case has worked its way through the direct state appeals process as well as the state post-conviction relief process, trial and appellate. And the significance of that movement into this next phase is that the resource demands of federal habeas corpus are dramatically increased compared with what precedes them in the state process, in part just by the sheer lawyering that is applied to capital cases by the Federal Public Defender's Office. I think we believe there may be as many as 7 attorneys who have already been assigned or will be assigned to the processing of that first case. So the demands that will fall on the Defense of Criminal Convictions Program in servicing that case, I can't quantify those for you right now, but they're going to be significant. And they represent a further pull of resource away from the resources available to service the balance of the Defense of Criminal Convictions caseload, both appellate as well as post-conviction. Those would conclude my thoughts at this time about this program area, Chair Richardson.
All right. Thank you. I haven't had a chance to see it. Maybe you have compiled it, maybe not, but... certainly it would be appropriate to have our Department of Justice, our caseload, type of caseloads, number of attorneys, caseload per attorney, number of paralegals, caseload assignments compared with those of other states so that we would have some benchmark that we could compare the workload and the amount of work that's being done in Oregon's DOJ with those of other states, so that there would be something to compare to, because it's very difficult, obviously, for this committee to know whether our DOJ is, the department is being overworked, or is these are adjustments that are appropriate. I mean, this 3% is on a $10.58 million budget, and we're taking down $316,000, so it'll be $10.243 million. Now, that may be a very significant burden, or it may be something that isn't, depending on how the department's functioning. And I, as I've said before, I don't have any experience with the department, and I don't know if there has been those comparisons made.
Chair Richardson, I believe we have made those, and we will be happy to, collect those again and provide those to you.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's my understanding that we're not going to be approving this, the total DOJ budget, until tomorrow. Work session has been scheduled for 2 days. This seems to me very similar. Well, my big concern is we look at the 2003-2005 budget at $1.6 million, and now we're going at $11.6 million. And now we're looking at an actual decrease in funding from the previous biennium of almost a half million dollars a year. If we, all through the public safety hearings, we've talked about a system. There's a lot of pressures on that system, be they at the district attorney level, whether it's
in corrections, where the pressures are there. And we have to keep all phases of that system in some level of balance. And so when we disproportionately change one piece of it, stuff doesn't happen. The appeal work will be slowed down. We'll be asking for continuances so that either the legal process either drags out longer, would probably cost us more money in the long run. And I'm especially in light of the 3% materials cut, which is a big part of this actual decrease. That's about half of their overall decrease from last biennium. I really think that maybe going back and revisiting this with the co-chairs or developing a budget note that would encourage them to bring a plan of remediation of this problem to the e-board if they can't find internal solutions. But I think we need to address it, and I certainly would hope it could be addressed before I have to vote on the overall budget, because you know this flies in the face of keeping the whole system in relation.
Representative Hansen, you know, you have certainly a lot more experience with this, having sat through the hearings than I have, but the assumption that you're making that's inherent in what you're saying is that they were already functioning at 100% and that thingy reduction therefore will have a direct effect on the ability to carry the other responsibilities that they have. And I don't know if that is the case or not the case. And so the co-chairs have they may need to look at that again. At this point, we have a governor's recommended budget, and the co-chairs have all gone through and they've made these decisions that we need to make these cuts. I'm happy to review information that they would provide, but I'm not going to make a recommendation that the co-chairs are wrong without having more than just kind of a gut feel that they're already working 100% and this is going to have a drastic effect.
Well, Mr. Chair, in response to that, certainly I think every aspect of state government can be improved and can be more efficient and can work smoother. We know what the overall caseload is in terms of the use of meth, the use of the number of convictions that have occurred, we know what the caseload stress on this agency is going to be. A 10% cut by the governor's office is significant. And he was obviously operating under revenue forecasts that were based in December. That has changed. It's one thing to ask them to improve, and the constant improvement in efficiency should always be there. If we were expecting them to make no improvements in efficiency, then we would be automatically increasing their budget. In this case, we're decreasing it by a fairly healthy amount. And that, I don't think we can, based on the nature of the kind of activity that they're involved in and the lack of control of it, we don't know what cases are going to be appealed. In the federal capital cases, we certainly don't know what the amount of federal defenders are, we don't have control of how much emphasis they're putting on the cases. So since we don't have, that's where I think it's unreasonable to expect that just through efficiencies, they're going to take the increased workload of the next biennium along with an actual dollar budget cut. And this is disproportionate to what the other public safety agencies are taking and are involved in. And that's where I talked about trying to maintain the balance. Okay. So this is pretty significant.
So noted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hannah.
Let me throw a
little different light to the subject that I'm not in the legal field, so I don't pretend to understand this, and I look forward to your review of the information provided from the agency in terms of at what level they were working in terms of in their capacity. But if you look at these package 090 and 811 combined, you're looking at over 14,000 hours of billable reduction, which if you think about it over the biennium is 600 hours a month. And I just think it's something that we need to look at. And as I have said in other committees, when you throw a blanket 3% additional cut to some agencies, that can be to the supply area. In this agency, as I understand it, it's really program-like related. You have to combine the two, the 90 and the 090 and the 811 when you look at this. Again, in my mind, this doesn't keep us from moving forward from my perspective, but I do believe as the chairman, you have an opportunity to speak with the co-chairs directly. And the one of the things that I agree with Representative Hansen on is that this is a team effort when it comes to the whole legal system. And if it's a one-inch hose going around, I think we're clamping down here to half-inch size, and we're gonna put a significant reduction in the ability of this particular division to keep up. And I'm basing this not only on today's discussion, but many of the discussions in our former subcommittee as well.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, I'd like to thank the member from Southern Oregon for using a good plumbing analogy. I didn't have the guts to bring it up.
All right.
Why don't we adjourn for the day without completing work on this one subsection, and then we'll pick up where we left off tomorrow, and that'll also give me a little bit of time to talk to co-chairs about their decision in this regard, and then is it possible to have that information this afternoon? If that could be emailed to me, I'd appreciate it. And I'd love to give me data that I can talk with co-chairs about. So, no problem with that? Not, then we will carry this discussion over till tomorrow. And without objection, we're adjourned.
Great. Appreciate you, Mr. Chair.